This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer. It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Great to have you with us for another episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. This is your chance to catch up on time spent with our best guests, interesting real life stories and advice that everybody needs. We were looking behind the headlines with Lumilia Malava. She's our resident legal eagle from HPL Malava and Pluka. It is one of the busiest hours on the radio, with listeners getting in touch with their common questions. In this hour, we talked about how to report people not wearing masks, new laws regarding LLCs. Can you have a side hustle and not inform your employer? Plus, what you need to know if you're contemplating divorce. Lumilia joins us live on the show every 2 weeks. We'll always give you a heads up. Here she is taking on your questions.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
How are you this afternoon, my love?
I am great. Thanks very much. And I'm happy to hear your excited cookie voice.
I am. Well, do you know what? We are going on holiday tomorrow, but I hadn't allowed myself to think that it was possible until we all got our negative PCR tests back. So I got them this morning and I was like, Phoebe, you don't have COVID. Tabitha, you don't have COVID. So it was a bit of a dancing. And now I've got to pack and actually do the paperwork for going away.
But it's a bit of a rub in, to be honest with you, because we had a holiday scheduled as well.
And
ours
canceled
all together.
Why?
Yeah, we were planning to fly to Cape Town, and Emirates is not ready to resume flights, so we had a very nice holiday planned, and so my spirits have been a little deflated over the last few days.
I'm really sorry, but you know what? We had such a lovely weekend because the weather now is gorgeous, and I almost thought it's a shame to go away from the UAE right now because the weather's just beautiful, so it's a good time to have a spring break and good time to be with the family, no matter where you are in the world. Now, I'm an excited cookie. What are you this afternoon? How are you feeling? And what was the last thing you ate?
Last thing I ate, I'm not even sure. Oatmeal. So perhaps a little boring oatmeal. You can call me that for the day.
You're a deflated oatmeal. Oh. Right.
Let's talk about you.
No, oh, I'm sorry. Well, we have got lots to talk about this afternoon. So thank you so, so much for your time. We're going to get through as many as we can, as I said. Starting with this one from Anonymous saying, my tenant has been served a year's eviction notice that concludes in January 2022. A tenancy contract is up for renewal next month. Would we need to renew the tenancy contract until the end of handover? Until the date of handover. Also, what happens if she refused the exit post eviction date? Thanks for all the help. You're a rock star. I think the rock star is definitely aimed at you, Lumilia, because I read this and go, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. So tenant has been served eviction notice, concludes next January next year. It's up for renewal next month. Do they need to renew the tenancy contract until the date of handover?
Yes, in short, they will need to renew the contract for the remainder of the term until January 2022. And it just will need to be very clear that it is just a limited contract only to that period, and it's on the basis of already served legal notice. Mm-hmm. Now, in the event, kind of going back to the second part of that question, in the event the tenant refuses to leave, that can always happen. At that point, the only option will be to go to court or to RDC, the Rent Dispute Committee. And in that case, it will be very important to present the eviction notice and obviously the renewed contract in support of it. So manage your expectations. We see this all too often where even with all the legal grounds in place, in practical terms, you still need to fight for your rights.
Fight for your right to party. Right. Question for you from Scott. And I'm really glad, Scott, that you've raised this. I think it's something a lot of people have noticed around the UAE. Scott's saying there's always a group of kids and nannies outside our building. It's not a play area and they never wear masks. The kids are around 8 to 11 years old. We asked security, but they were not helpful and have no authority. How can we report it?
Well, I mean, there's definitely Dubai Police, and that's one way to report it. And to be honest with you, with the kids, as far as the kids are concerned, they will obviously not be reprimanded because they're juvenile. The nannies might be, and the guardians, whoever's taking care of them, they might be reprimanded for not wearing masks themselves and for failing to put masks on the children. But that's kind of an extreme measure, but that's really ultimately the only way, effective way of calling in the authorities, because there's no other authority they could effectively call in cases like this to the police if they want to be that drastic or extreme.
one of those things, isn't it? Just kind of, you might notice it one day and then you notice it again and it gets more and more annoying. And you, yeah, I feel you, Scott. I really, really do. A message here from Jay saying, in light of reduced salary, I want to set up a side business. I will get a DD license, but wondered if I needed to tell my employers. Please say no. And then about 5 exclamation marks. What does the law say about a side hustle and needing to employ the person that's perhaps providing your visa labor card?
Fortunately, the law has changed on this not long ago, and now there is no requirement to get a permission from the employer, as was the case before. So in short, you can set up a side business now, and there's no more requirement for you to request employer from the employer to actually allow you to either be to set up your own company or to work for another company. So it is possible.
There you go, Jay. Go forth and side hustle. Gav been in touch saying, it sounds petty, but I'm really annoyed. I already love this message. Gav saying, we had a custom kitchen fitted in our villa and over the weekend had the kitchen repainted. The guys have clearly stood on cupboard door handles and one has snapped off. They've generally done a shoddy job with paint on the unit and tops too. I was at work when they left and our nanny paid them in cash. Any chance of taking it further or even getting a refund? I want the information before I call the company. Thank you.
I mean, yes, in short, but it all depends on the evidence. So whoever did it, you need to be prepared to present evidence who those people were and on what basis they were walking around on your countertops and that there was some sort of money that changed hands. Because if you're asking for a refund, obviously you need to show that you have paid them and and what that amount was, because when you're asking for a refund, that's what they will be looking at. So I'd say, but I would imagine it's not a very large amount. So going to court over this probably is extreme and perhaps commercially not viable. But what you could do is if those particular workers work for the company itself, then you could report the company. I mean, either report to the company and request for them to get some sort of compensation, or report the company if the company refuses to take measures. And you can report the company to the Consumer Protection Department, for example. So, I mean, these are some more kind of administrative issue or things that could be done to put some pressure on the company. But for something like this, I probably would caution against going too formal with a court case or anything more official.
Oh,
unfortunately, so my guess, this is more less of a legal advice, but more practical in the future. Whenever there's any kind of money changing hands, there should always be some sort of documentation who you're giving money to, even if it's written by hand. There should be like a name of a person who accepts the money and definitely some kind of contact details, for example, MSID number and such. And unfortunately, to this day, people feel too scared to ask for that information, and they're all too willing to give money and not ask for information about who it is they're giving money to. So my advice is, whoever, even if it's your nanny, either write a letter for them to submit and have it signed by the contractors, or at least even have her write it out by hand, but definitely get a copy at the very least of the MSID. So then there would increase chances at least these people will be held accountable, if not legally, at least in practice.
Good advice. And Gav, I'm sorry about your door handles. Sanjay's been in touch saying, hey, Ludmilla, would there be an update on the laws required to go self-sponsored for LLC companies on the mainland? Any update there, Ludmilla?
Well, the update is that the law that introduced the particular article became effective, or becomes effective, as of April 1st. So at least legally and theoretically speaking, as of that date, there should be an option of opening up companies without the requirement of a local sponsor. That is a legal update. On the practical side of things, we did visit the Department of Economic Development last week, and just to manage everyone's expectations, it was not clear to us that they were ready to embrace this particular change. So in their minds, they are still waiting for some instructions as to how to implement this. So the law is there, and as of April 1st, we should be able to avail ourselves of the new law. But in practical terms, it remains to be seen how fast the law will be implemented.
Thank you, Ludmilla. Quite the message that's come in on 4001 from GD saying, I am owed 1 million dirhams. I have 4 checks of equal amounts. All have bounced. Police files have been opened and that person is blocked from exiting the country. I now understand the police court have fined that person on issuing these checks. What is the next step to recover the money or seize that person's assets? GD, that's no joke. What on earth would you advise here, Ludmilla?
Well, interestingly enough, we've covered this in the last, I think, last session, but the great tool that's available to the listener now is what's called the payment order. So that's a new, it's a fairly new and expedited judicial process to seek payment of a commercial, of a confirmed commercial debt. Now, bounce checks are considered as confirmed commercial debt. So the best thing to do is to file for this payment order. And to do this, you go to either do it online or to the typing center. And you file for the request on the specifically, it's called as a performance or a payment order request. When that is filed, that's called an ex parte order, which means that you don't need to serve the other side, and it's just between you and the court. So you would file this request for of a payment order. The court is required to issue a judgment within 7 days from the time it's filed. And all you need to present in this particular case are the checks. And then after that, once that's issued, when the actual a judgment is issued, then you have 15 days, or then you have to serve that judgment on the other side, is the judgment itself. And then once that side is served, then you have they have 15 days to appeal it. If they don't appeal it, then the judgment becomes enforceable or final, and therefore enforceable. And then with that and that final judgment, then you can go and start seizing the person's assets. So, you know, all in all, in about 3 weeks' time, or definitely within a month's time, you may be able to start enforcing the actual assets that belong to this particular person. So it's a great tool to use, highly recommended. Don't be afraid of it. It's not expensive, especially with something like what you have, which is a check, because there's not really a way to disprove or challenge the check, because that is definitely the classical example of a confirmed commercial debt.
A good time to be asking that question, GD. Please keep us posted on that, and wishing you all the very best. Anonymous asking, if a married woman left the country for more than a year, can the husband file for divorce without her consent?
In short, no. And this is because, for a number of reasons, administrative and legal. So the other side has to be, first of all, the other side has to be served, and that is the woman has to be served. And without that, you can't really file a divorce case in particular, because it's a personal matter case. One, and two, because there may be a question of jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction, because the court does not have jurisdiction over somebody that's not in this country. So you cannot file a divorce without the other side being present or participating in the proceedings. No, the answer is no. The only way to do it is either wait for her to come back here or to do it in a country wherever she resides.
Staying with divorce, unfortunately, anonymous message saying, I'm seriously contemplating divorce. What legal advice should I get? We're not very well off, so can't afford huge fees. We have no property. He has lots of savings, but honestly, I'm not interested in anything he has. We do have two young kids, and I do not wish to restrict access. Any advice or tips?
Yes, it depends on, to some extent, it depends on the religion. However, since given listeners' question, their financial means are obviously more limited. So the best and perhaps the most economical way forward is to file a divorce under Sharia. And that's because it's this the default application of the law, and it's also the law that the courts, local courts, are most familiar with. And therefore, the proceedings that are based on divorce proceedings that are based on the application of Sharia law are a lot more expeditious and less sort of time-consuming, and also perhaps least emotional, if you will, especially if you don't have many points to debate. So in this particular case, if you don't want anything financially from your husband, then you know that Sharia is a law that will basically allow you to kind of walk away from that without much arguing. And also with regards to the children, under Sharia, the mother gets custody of the children and the father gets guardianship. So that would be, you know, since you don't really want to restrict the movement of your children. So I think Sharia really would serve your purposes, whether you're Muslim or not. However, if you're not Muslim and you file a request for divorce under Sharia law, then the other side, your partner, ultimately has to agree to the application of Sharia. And if he doesn't, then he would have to put forward some other alternative law that he wants to apply. And in that case, it can get more drawn out, just because then you have to educate the judge what law that he wants to apply. But so it's possible for him to drag things out. But the default application here and the court's best familiarity is with Sharia law. So at the end, it certainly would be in the interest of both parties to have Sharia law apply in this case.
Thank you for that. Really, really helpful. We have had a number of messages, unfortunately, Ludmilla, about people simply not being paid. So I'm going to highlight this one from Priya, and hopefully it'll help other people out there. Priya saying, husband works as a project manager and the agency he's working through is defaulting on paying his invoices. Keeps promising payments, but saying they're in financial difficulty and are only able to pay a small percentage of what they owe. What can he do to get his money?
Well, if there are invoices, once again, there could be another example of a confirmed commercial debt. Depending on the format and the information listed in the invoices, invoices classically as well are thought or deemed as confirmed commercial debt. So the best thing to do is to try to, once again, file for payment order through the typing center or online. And try to follow that process to get the invoice paid. So that would be perhaps the best advice, and that's generally the advice that we give to all small businesses who have these kinds of predicaments.
Okay, I hope that helps. Speaking of paperwork, or perhaps lack of paperwork, T has been in touch saying, I work in retail, was the manager of a shop, but couldn't commit to full-time because of personal reasons. So I asked if I could go part-time. This has been agreed and came to effect last week. However, we've signed nothing and our new contracts have not come through. I deeply regret my decision already and want to ask for my old job back. I've not signed anything, have only done a few days of my new job, but I don't know the legalities of this. I'm so unhappy with my new hours. Thank you. What would you say to T on this?
To be honest with you, it's a fairly simple matter because you just go back to your previous employer and ask them, tell them that you reconsidered, that you've made a mistake and that you want to get your hours back and you want to give up your other job. And it's ultimately going to be up to that employer. And if they want to keep you on, they will make whatever accommodations they can. For you, irrespective of whether you have a document or not. But if they were happy to let you go because perhaps this has also served their purposes better, then it would be a harder case to sell. And in that event, you just need to try to find yourself another option to supplement your income. Okay. So the legality here is less relevant. It's more about your company and whether they are willing and interested in taking you back.
Okay. Another message about mask violation. Jess saying, I take my child to a centre for education support and there are so many people outside smoking, obviously not wearing their masks. There are also three restaurants in and right next to the same building. So the whole walkway is filled with people having snacks, drinking or smoking, all masks down. It just doesn't feel safe. Is there anything I can do to take formal action? As we spoke to earlier, the police are very much welcoming messages. You know, we heard at the end of January a statement encouraging all members of the community to report any violations to the Dubai Police Call Centre. That's 901. They've also got a police eye service, which is available on Dubai Police's smartphone app called Dubai Police for Apple and Android. So we obviously want to encourage everyone to adhere to these measures, but the police want you to be their eyes, Jess, so you can, of course, report it through that app. And Jack's been in touch asking, with the latest DED business licence laws regarding Emirati agent requirements, do we still need to stipulate Emirati agent for our LLC business or restaurant, or is it waived and we do not need an Emirati agent? If not needed, how can we waive our pre-existing Emirati agent for our licence renewal? Thank you.
So what the listener is asking is not too much the, I guess there's two different concepts. One is the Emirati shareholder and the other one is the Emirati agent. Mm-hmm. The agent was previously required either when there was a foreign company that was setting up a branch that was fully owned by a foreign company. In that case, there was a requirement of an agent, not a shareholder, but an agent. And also in certain cases where it was a sole establishment, for example, that was owned by a foreigner, there might have been a requirement of an agent. So that, as part of the new the amendments to the company's law, that particular requirement has also been waived. There will no longer be a requirement of having an agent. In fact, that particular requirement, I think if my memory serves me well, came into effect earlier than the one regarding the shareholder. So it should actually already be in effect. And that's legally speaking. Now, with regards to what you do about your current situation, where you have already a company, pre-existing company, and a pre-existing agent, this new law, and it's important to highlight, really applies prospectively and not so much retrospectively. So whatever you have in place right now will ultimately require an amendment, an agreement with your current agent, or current shareholder. So that particular process, you will need to ultimately have an agreement with your agent to agree for them to be removed, and perhaps some, maybe some sort of an expectation of a compensation that will be that will follow next. But so this law does not just automatically remove your current agent or your current shareholder. So you do definitely need to take that more seriously and find a process by which you can have them step down and perhaps compensate them and then move on.
Okay, hope that helps, Jack. Brian's been in touch saying, I had a close call on a pedestrian crossing earlier. A driver on his phone nearly hit me. All fine. Had me thinking, though, is there a claims court here, like in the UK, e.g. no win, no fee? Haven't heard no win, no fee in years. It's the kind of thing you'd see on, like, you know, morning TV ad breaks, you know, like slipped in the corridor at work and hit your head. No win, no fee. What about that, Ludmilla? Anything that you would share if someone's had had an accident where there is someone very clearly at fault?
Well, there's two ways to answer that, in two parts. One, there is no such thing as the claims court, the way, I guess, similar to the one in the UK, for example, here. It's just a regular court process. However, what the listener is referring to in terms of no win, no fee, that's not so much up to the court. It's more to the lawyers that represent claimants. And so many lawyers do actually represent, or at least in the past, historically represented parties on the no win, no fee basis. But it's becoming less of an acceptable mechanism just because, I guess, sort of the liabilities involved. So it's not so much about the court, it's more for the lawyers. But it's interesting enough, as I make that statement, there's the federal law regulating the legal profession, which actually expressly makes the what's called contingency fee arrangements illegal. So the law says it's illegal, but a lot of the lawyers for now, I guess, have sort of practiced on the contingency fee basis, irrespective or despite the law. So it's a bit of a conflict in practice as well.
Interesting. Be safe out there, Brian, please. And last question, and one that really shocked me, come in from Stu, saying, last year our nursery left my two-year-old in the toilets when all the staff went home. She was there alone for 45 minutes until my wife broke in with the security guard and found her. She's okay, thank goodness. An inquiry has been completed and the nursery probably will close. However, I would like to pursue compensation as my wife is incredibly upset and has needed therapy. Do we have any recourse? I just want to say, first of all, Stu, that is horrendous. And I'm so, so sorry that that happened. Obviously, nursery looks like it could be closing as a result of that investigation. But what about any compensation or recourse? She's saying his wife's undergoing therapy to help her deal with this. What would you say, Ludmilla?
I mean, it is horrendous, as I agree wholeheartedly. With regards to the compensation, I mean, there is a possibility of filing a court case for compensation, but it's important to have evidence or have that claim for compensation substantiated with the actual expenses that have been incurred as part of this. So, for example, all these medical bills, if they are not being paid by insurance, there's definitely a way to claim those back if they are out-of-pocket expenses. But otherwise, if there's no sort of evidence to substantiate additional or like emotional distress, for now, the UAE courts do not grant compensation for kind of mental damage and emotional distress without evidence.
Okay, really hope that helps, Stu, and wishing you and the family all the very best. Ludmilla, thank you for your time this afternoon. I know you're a very busy woman, so to seal you away for an hour to answer questions is really valuable. I know you help an awful lot of people, so thank you so much. Wishing you and the family a happy spring break. Hope you manage to switch off, even if it means throwing your phone in the sea and not replying to emails.
I've done that before.
I have too.
I've done that before.
Not on purpose, and I did cry.
Indeed, I regret it as well.
Have a wonderful spring break. We'll catch up when everyone is back. And thank you again. Ludmilla Maliver on hand with some great advice.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Don't forget, you can tune into Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, on weekdays on Dubai Eye 103.8 between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.